Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Indian Hotels Company Limited earnings conference call for Q4 FY 2022-23. On the call, we have with us Mr. Puneet Chhatwal, Managing Director and CEO, IHCL, and Mr. Giridhar Sanjeevi, EVP and CFO, IHCL. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during this conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to hand over the conference call to Mr. Puneet Chhatwal. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining this call. Let me give you basically two directions on this call. The first one being what the year meant for Indian Hotels, the year gone by, and what is the outlook, and what we can expect in this year to come and in the short term till 2025. On the year gone by, we have four pillars: performance, growth, brandscape, and our ESG initiatives. On performance, we have had a record year of performance. If we take the three best consecutive years in the history of Indian Hotels, which was 2006-2008, followed by 2017-2020, the combined performance of the three years is less than the financial performance of this year. That is really driven by growth, which is industry-leading. We have the highest pipeline of projects, by our brandscape, which we reimagined almost five years ago and were derailed for a bit because of COVID. During COVID also, we added a few other brands and services and also, you know, adding brands which were adding high margins. That resulted in an enterprise revenue of over 10,000 crores, close to 11,000 crores. Our reported revenue, as you know, is around 5,950 crores. Because we add asset-light business to our model, it's important to start articulating what the system-wide revenue or the enterprise level revenue is. The PAT of 1,000 crores and a free cash flow exceeding 1,000 crores also. Very importantly, each of the quarters were the best quarters in history. The Q1, the Q2, the Q3, which was absolute highlight, and also the Q4, exactly the same trend as is evident for last three decades. The only difference being Q1 and Q2 were also very profitable, and Q3 beat all possible estimates, followed by Q4, which was very, very good, following in the footsteps of Q3. Our industry-leading margins, you know, of 32.7% on consolidated level, because in standalone we come to almost 40%, is almost doubling of margins where we are coming from historically. This is here to stay as we have guided under our Ahvaan 2025 strategy. Important milestone was Taj as one of the exceptional luxury hotel brands in the world, hits 100 hotels in operation or in development, where five years ago we had 31 hotels in operation and another seven or eight in development, which shows this is a 2.5x growth despite two years of COVID in the backbone of the company, in the crown jewel of not just Indian Hotels, but of the nation. Last year, we signed 36 new contracts. We were added to our pipeline, and we opened 16 hotels. Despite opening of 16 hotels, we still stay at a pipeline of almost 73 hotels which will open even if we stop signing anything going forward, which we are not going to do, but just as an example that we have a very robust pipeline, we have the industry-leading pipeline on the Indian subcontinent, and we expect to open more hotels than 16, and I'll come to that when we go to the outlook part of it. I think also we started making small moves on the international expansion again because our focus for the last 5 years was India. Our 250th hotel was in Riyadh, and recently we signed a twin of Taj and Vivanta in Dhaka, and we will be doing more on an asset light basis, on a operating lease or a management contract. We are not into acquisition of assets. That brings us to our portfolio of 263 hotels, and with Taj already having hit 100 and Ginger getting close to 100, we've been able to create critical mass in our key brands, and it will be nice to watch how Vivanta SeleQtions and Ama evolve over the next years. And also the balanced portfolio guidance that we have given. So if we include hotels in development, then we are already at 50-50. And within the next 18 months, we expect that in operation also to come to a 50-50, a balanced portfolio, a right mix of asset heavy where we have owned and leased portfolio coupled with fee-driven business. This is important because the owned and leased portfolio is giving us the right operating leverage so that when we are witnessing an uptick in the cycle, these hotels add on the absolute amount, and the management fee business is helping us drive margins in a very strong way. And our management fee business has almost doubled in the last year, so almost 400 crores of management fee, and this is only going up. And also in terms of unlocking the potential of most of our brands, besides Taj being rated as the world's strongest hotel brand for 2 years in a row, other brands are really picking up and are getting to where they rightfully belong within their competitive set. So also Vivanta and SeleQtions together are almost 78 hotels, and very soon we should get there also to a number of 100. We are very, very proud of the guidance that we have given under Ginger. And, you know, we embarked on this journey of reimagining Ginger 4-5 years ago. The management there did a great job. And in the last year, Ginger reported a revenue of 300 crores and an EBITDA of 120 crores, a margin of 39%. We expect this to increase. It increased by 13 percentage points. So coming from 26, it went to 39. But the best here also is yet to come. And we eagerly await the opening of Ginger in Santa Cruz in Mumbai as of 1st of October. And I think this brand has the potential, or a brand in this category, in this segment, have the potential to deliver a minimum of 50% margin. So that's something we are very pleased about. And so are we pleased also about our flight kitchen business, which we have a joint venture with SATS from Singapore. For the first time in history, it did a margin of 20%, a revenue which exceeded 600 crores and an EBITDA of 127 crores. Since the opening of Qmin, or since the launch of Qmin, it has done a GMV of 150 crores. Today we have almost 34 outlets, of which 50% are in Ginger hotels, which we very affectionately call the Qminization of Ginger, which means the all-day dining of all Ginger hotels will slowly but steadily get rebranded into Qmin. And Ama is something which we will start working on together with Qmin to scale up in the next years to come. A very important part that we would like to share with you, that Taj Mahal Palace, our temple of hospitality, is 100% green, 68% through renewable energy from Tata Power, and the 32% we had to buy the certificates for renewable energy. So that we became 100% green. Our six pillars of Paathya, the 100% waste elimination, 100% of the hotels to have organic waste management system, 100% recycling of water, all hotels to have EV charging system and all hotels to have green meetings, which is being launched in June, and 50% of our energy from renewable is the targets that we have given for 2030. Very pleased to say that we are not only on target, we are ahead of our guidance and ahead of our target on ESG, which remains a key pillar, not just for Indian Hotels, but for the entire Tata Group companies. Also, we were given awards on corporate governance, the Golden Peacock, the ICSI National Award for Governance also, as well as very recently the Risk Management Award for Business Model Adaptability from ICICI in collaboration with CNBC. So I think in all, since the last 5 years, from an aspiration 2022 of a turnaround of a business model, in between derailed but helping with a reset in 2020 and a further guidance of Ahvaan under 2025, the company is very well positioned to achieve a 33% EBITDA margin over the business cycle by 25. We will remaining a zero net debt company with a 300 hotel plus portfolio and a balanced portfolio built on the bedrock of the culture and values of both Tata Group as well as Taj, which stands for Trust, Awareness and Joy, leveraging our enablers and our initiatives, which keep going on reimagining our landscape, re-engineering our margins, restructuring our portfolio, and the journey of most iconic and most profitable hospitality company continues. With that, I'd like to get to the outlook. I think this is what has happened. We said in the short term, this is what we'll do. We got derailed. But where do we see the sector today? I think very important to note is one key factor which is helping the sector as well as Indian Hotels is that demand is growing faster than supply. So while a lot of people want to talk about pent-up demand, I would say pent-up demand is like 3 months, 6 months, 9 months. But the reality is that although just domestic, as foreign tourist arrival is not yet come, the domestic demand has been strong enough and is outpacing supply because not many hotels got built in the last 3 years. And that imbalance in demand and supply will continue, which will help drive occupancies as well as the rates in the sector. And given that we are present in 31 of the states and union territory of India, I think we are very well positioned to capture the benefits of that demand. And it's also based on all the guidance given by various companies, whether it's HVS or Horvath in their annual report on Hotelivate, that the demand in, especially in India, where 87% of our portfolio and revenues come from, is strong, is going to stay robust, and it is going to get boosted by three or four key factors. Supply is one part of it, but the G20 this year till October and expected to peak in September, October, is going to aid the need for the rooms and food and beverage. Number two is the World Cup cricket. And number three is that the sector, tourism sector, expects that the foreign tourist arrivals as of October will go back to the pre-COVID level, which was at only 60% for last year. So I think the outlook remains very positive. What can we expect from Indian Hotels with this outlook? We'll continue our pace of signing. We will keep adding hotels where we think we can create new destinations in the spirit of what Tata Group has done, what the oldest operating company, which we are, of Tata Group has done consistently over a century. And we are also pleased to say that we'll be opening a minimum of 20 hotels this year. Last year we opened 16. This year we will open 20. We will cross the target of 200 hotels in operation globally and get very close to having 200 hotels in operation in India. But if we were to say South Asia, we will definitely achieve that also this year. So that's on the growth part of it. In terms of new businesses, which are very close to our heart, we did very well on incremental cash flows and in incremental profitability. We did not really spend any money on growing Ama or Cumin. I think this year we will use some of our free cash flow to really scale up these businesses because of the margins that they drive, and at the same time also the other businesses that we've been guiding on, like Chambers, we will be adding on that. So Chambers in Bengaluru at Taj West End will open this year. We have applied for permissions for doing Chambers in New York. So really making Chambers also a global brand. And some of our food and beverage brands, you know, food and beverage is very strong in South Asia and Southeast Asia. And we are very optimistic about growing our presence, not just with Cumin as a QSR, but some of our iconic brands. And very pleased to announce that in the next week, we are launching House of Ming at the Taj in London and a Bombay Brasserie at the Taj in Campton Place in San Francisco. And we are hoping to take Bombay Brasserie as a brand to other parts of the world where we have the rights and we have been able to register the brand. So all in all, I think in all businesses, not just the rooms business, but food and beverage business, which is aided very strongly this year by G20, the events, the conferences that are happening in India, a very strong, robust wedding business, scaling up new businesses, opening hotels continuously on management contracts or operating leases, slowly but steadily starting to build on our international portfolio just with the Taj brand. I think Indian Hotels is well positioned and also to give this guidance that that this year what we have seen and today being, you know, like almost 4 weeks into the new year, the trend that we are seeing in terms of business that has happened, also the business on the books, we are very much in line and ahead of April of last year and expect the same thing in May. Albeit, I have to say that the visibility of long-term bookings still remains very short. So it's very difficult to make predictions about what will happen in July, August, September, but the trend that what we are witnessing today is extremely positive, and the growth of the GDP in India, the growth of buoyancy in business, the need to do business, airlines, travels, air, you know, all the planes are full, the seats are full. So especially on the key sectors, Delhi, Mumbai, Delhi, Bangalore or Chennai, all the key metros, and also the upcoming new airports, we feel that that the travel remains very strong, both on business and on leisure. And one of the few trends that we can highlight here is bleisure. Now, whether it is business with leisure or leisure with business, this has become a permanent trend since COVID. We are seeing no change on that one, on that front. And also, when it comes to spending money, I think it's not revenge. It's not like that what they call the kal ho na ho factor. That's not there. The main thing is that people are still saving, but they are willing to spend a bit more than they were spending in a pre-COVID time, which is also assisting not only in our rooms demand, but especially in our food and beverage demand and in the restaurants. So I think that's what I wanted to say about the year gone by and the outlook that is out there. And we will continue on our journey of balancing the portfolio, not investing into single assets except for very key strategic investments like the Ginger in Santa Cruz or our combo development Vivanta and Ginger in Ekta Nagar, which is Kevadia or where the Statue of Unity is, totaling 275 rooms, but there we also get, we are eligible to get certain subsidies, making the investments very feasible. I think the outlook remains strong and we are at the beginning of an upcycle which has witnessed a few quarters, and we feel that Indian Hotels is very well positioned to take benefit of this upcycle. Over to you, Giri.
No, no, thank you, Puneet. I think Puneet has summarized it. I think we have had a great year in terms of the overall business, and as we explained, the outlook is strong. I think the core thing that we need to remember is that the story of hospitality is a story of penetration, actually, which means as airports come up, as the growth is happening in cities beyond the key cities, actually, it is really a story of penetration, which will be multi-year. And that's really the story. We will talk about this more, not just on this call, but we also have announced a Capital Market Day on the 11th of May, 2023. And we will talk about it more. And I think over now I'll open it up for questions, actually.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The first question is from the line of Binay Singh from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, team. Congratulations for a very good set of numbers. I have two questions, one on Ginger and the second one on our U.S. business. Starting on Ginger, we are seeing good performance. Could you talk a little bit about the roadmap to 50% EBITDA margin? Is this coming off from like the two, three key factors that will take us from around 39% that we are at today to around 50%? The second question on the U.S. side, Darren, also could you talk a little bit about what's happening over there? How did the March quarter go? When do you see that business breaking even? Thanks.
So, Binay, thank you. Ginger is something which we are very focused on. I think it's an ideal brand for a heterogeneous landscape of India. And it is the fastest growing brand in terms of number of hotels, not in number of rooms, because a lot of Ginger hotels can be 60, 80, 90 rooms. So, except for the one which we're doing in Santa Cruz is 371 rooms because it's in Mumbai. A similar large size development will also be happening at the Bengaluru airport. So just to give you a flavor, that Ginger reported revenue is around 300 crores. A hotel like Santa Cruz, which we own, has the potential on stabilized figure of at least 100 crores in revenue with 371 rooms. So I think that is what makes us believe that Ginger landscape will continue to evolve very rapidly. And this is not something which is going to happen in 3 years or 4 years from now. It's already delayed by 6 to 8 months because of COVID. So it should have normally opened. But now we are opening it hopefully on the 1st of October this year. And similarly, many other Ginger branded hotels will drive the growth and this business model, and especially what we call under the Lean Lux, because the new Gingers are all Lean Lux, and all the Lean Lux hotels are operating north of 50%. We have some old portfolio which we have to renovate, reposition, or get out of those contracts. Like a few of the contracts we did not renew, which we had when we started the Ginger brand, like the Rail Yatri Nivas. So we have given those up because they are not good for the brand today, where we have reimagined it to. So we expect Ginger over the next 3 years to go north of 50% in margins, as I said in my opening remarks. And on the U.S. side, we have renovated, basically it's New York, San Francisco was profitable pre-COVID, is going to get there as the market begins to evolve. On the New York, we have done very well in curtailing our losses, and they've reduced to a significant level. But besides that, we have reduced the cost of lease. We have renegotiated our agreement on the pier. We have completely revamped the banquet hall there, which is one of the largest halls in that marketplace, in that micro marketplace around Central Park. And it's just getting to the finishing phase. So we are positive about New York. We are extremely, you did not ask this, but I'll say this on London, with all the changes that we have done, including now the opening of the Chinese, besides the Quillon, which we have had there as a Michelin star restaurant. Also, we opened the Chambers in London. So a lot of investment in our key marquee assets is also helping drive performance. Of course, UK and US are not at the pre-COVID level. They're still operating at 92%, but we expect in the next few months for them to either get to 1920 level or definitely even exceed the 1920 level. So that's a kind of upside we are also waiting for.
Thanks for that response. Just one question. Clearly, the business will generate another year of very strong free cash flow. Anything that you will do differently in the coming 2-3 years from what we've done in the last 2-3 years? And if you could also share the CapEx number that we expect for next year. Thanks.
See, our CapEx is always around, there is an operational CapEx, and there is, the CapEx in new construction and building other businesses. So our CapEx figure is always around 5-6% of our reported revenue. And nothing is going to change on that. There will be certain situations where we invest, and in the interim, over the next 18-20 months, we kind of do a sale and manage back with a long-term management contract. That is something which we'll guide on during our capital market day. So on the CapEx side, that is what has helped us to get where we are today. As an example, 24 of our Taj-branded hotels were upgraded. If I look at total number of hotels upgraded, including Ginger in the Lean Lux, we have upgraded more than 40 hotels. That is also driving the performance. It's not just pent-up demand and an imbalance in demand and supply. It's hotels which needed renovation and were downgraded to Vivanta have been upgraded back to Taj, and that is what has also made Taj a 100-hotel portfolio. So I think CAPEX is a key, but intelligent use of CAPEX is the key to driving margin and creating a competitive advantage over the other brands and the competition in the mid and long term.
Thanks, Puneet. I look forward to the capital markets day. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Achal Kumar from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi. Morning, everyone. Congratulations on such a strong set of results. By the way, Puneet, I was in London for a couple of months and I saw your hotel. It's amazing. Chambers in London Hotel was really amazing. I really liked it. It's too good. But anyway, moving to the questions. I have 4 questions, if I may. First of all, I just want to understand, the government has recently announced that they want to make Delhi as an international hub. Do you have any plans to align your growth in that part of India, Delhi, Rajasthan, Agra? Have you thought about it? Do you have any plans to grow aggressively there in case government is successfully able to make Delhi as an international hub? That is my first question. Secondly, I'm referring to slide 38, which is a very nice slide. You mentioned about the EBITDA margin expansion from the existing hotels and from the new hotels. So just want to understand, you know, how long would it take for the new hotels, or you can say the middle block, to move to the left side of the block? So, I mean, you know, what is the gestation period when the new hotels could actually generate the similar kind of EBITDA margin as good for your existing hotels? So that is my second question. Third thing on the SATS, you reported a very strong growth in SATS. What was the driver of that growth? And now, what next? Where do you think the future growth could come from? Do you have any plans, anything in place which can sort of generate the similar kind of growth going ahead? Or is it a kind of feeling now that, okay, fine, we reach here and then this is the ceiling? And finally, probably if you could give us a bit more color that you've already reported 34% margin, EBITDA margin in Q4. Of course, you know, industry, as you rightly said, the industry dynamics are very strong, demand supply is very strong, looking at ARR and everything is going perfectly on your way. So what actually, do you think the margins could decline and then come back to your long-term target of 33%? Or how do you see that? Or if that's not the case, do you think it's now rather easy to achieve your EBITDA margin for FY26 with your cap now, which you're targeting in FY26 in the next year itself? If you could give us a bit more color on that. Thank you so much.
Achal, thank you. A lot of questions. But let me first start on a lighter note. What you said on slide number 38, in the middle, how it could move to the left, there is, from a guidance perspective, there is a mistake on that slide. The mistake is that the numbers are right, but it is not showing the return on equity or return on investment. There has been no investment in a Qmin or AMA, or, you know, this is really a clever use of the brands that we had by reimagining and repositioning them, but we have not invested money. So, like, let's say on the left side, if we say we have invested a lot of money into our entry into London and US and Land's End and all other places, there is no investment that has gone into Qmin or AMA or QSR or Chambers, etc. It's just reusing the same space by renovating it in a normal capex. So a lot of what you see on the left side, let's say a Chambers in Taj Mansingh in Delhi, is driving a lot of revenue. The Chambers in the middle that you see is only the fees from new members. But Chambers in Mansingh that the revenue it is driving is on the left of the chart. And the left of the chart has investment. The middle of the chart has hardly any investment except for asset management perspective. So that's one. Second is your question on growth, Delhi becoming hub. Of course, Delhi is the capital of India. The state capital is Delhi, or the national capital is Delhi, and the commercial capital is Mumbai. IHCL can never have enough hotels in these two metros. And we have just signed 2 days ago, we have not yet announced, another hotel in the Delhi NCR, Vivanta. And we are very well positioned to add more Taj properties. But what we will not do in Delhi is do a Taj that might dilute the positioning of Mansingh or Taj Palace, because we are the only brand which is present with two such properties plus a Connaught and an Ambassador under SeleQtions in Lutyens Delhi. So, and Connaught just got added. So we are not going to stop here. This will keep getting added. As also you said, Jaipur. Jaipur, we have just added Taj Amir with the largest banquet hall that we will have in our Taj system. So despite having Rambagh and, you know, Rambagh Palace and Jaimal Palace and Devi Ratan and, you know, all the hotels. So our strategy in these key markets in India is to own them. We will be the largest players in all these markets in number of hotels, not necessarily maybe in number of rooms, because we are not in the business of taking rooms to a bank account. We want to cover the micro markets and the macro markets within these metros to the extent possible. So if we look at, let's say, Mumbai, so we will be opening very soon this year in Vikhrolia project. We opened the Vivanta in Navi Mumbai. We have the Taj Lands End. We have the Taj Mahal Palace. We have the Taj Santa Cruz. We have the President. So we have the Ginger in Andheri Teligali. We have the Ginger in Mahakali. We have the Ginger in Goregaon. We'll be opening a Ginger in Santa Cruz. And the journey will not stop here because these are very important markets. The commercial capital of the country and the national capital will keep seeing more and more growth, and that was the entire purpose of creating comprehensive brand management and focusing not just on Taj but also on other brands so we can get into the depth and the breadth of the market. So given this thing on the growth as well as on the other question that you said in the middle of the segment, it will also keep moving towards left as it matures. You know, it takes time to mature. So we'll keep nurturing our traditional businesses and keep growing them through market share, through clever asset management. And the new businesses, we will keep scaling them up. So once they become mature, we start adding further new businesses. So that is the strategy which we have communicated, which we'll have also in more depth and detail during Capital Market Day. And when it comes to margins, you know, margins is a combination, and I'll let Giri to add to that, is the operating leverage on the left side, what you see on slide 38, and on the middle, also the management fee business, the asset light model. So if you look at, like, let's say one parameter or one variable, corporate overhead. Our corporate overhead from 8% of total revenue has gone to 5.8%. Now, there's no reason this will go up again, despite increase in salaries, despite, you know, increase in number of people, because we are becoming more and more efficient. So I think margins, we will definitely remain within the guidance that we have given of 33%. Q3 and Q4 will have higher margins. Q1 and Q2 will have lower margins. So the blend of it should always keep us in line with 33 or ahead of 33. Giri?
Yeah. No, just building on it, I think, see, the heart of our strategy is the diversification on the top line, actually. I think while other hotel chains just have the rooms and food and beverage, which is where analysts sort of start focusing in terms of RevPARs and all of that, I think there I would sort of say that we have always differentiated and done better than the market in terms of RevPAR across cities, actually. So therefore, irrespective of the market, we will do better. That's number one. Number two, the asset-light growth, which is what we spoke about on Ginger, the Chambers, the Cumin, Amas, the management fees, I think they will continue to be very, very strong, actually. And so this diversification of top line is really the core to our strategy, coupled with the productivity on expenditure, actually. Hence, and any margin, the 33% margin that we talk about is really very healthy, actually. So we will, as Puneet just said, we will be within the guidance of 33%, and we will continue to progress the our strategy and execution to ensure that we have a healthy growth in top line, absolute EBITDA growth, and the PAT growths, actually. So that's the way we look at our business.
Sorry, last question on Taj Sats. If you could please give us a bit color on Taj Sats.
Yeah, should I do that, Puneet?
Yes, please.
So Taj Sats, I think, has done extremely well in terms of, number one, the opportunity which is there in the Indian ecosystem. With the growth in passenger traffic and the doubling of airports which is happening, there is a huge opportunity in terms of how the growth in flight kitchens is happening. That's number one. Number two is the whole synergy with the Tata Group in terms of Air India, Air Asia, and Vistara. So therefore, these are opportunities where we will continue to be the beneficiaries, actually. The third one is that the growing Indian business also means that there are a lot of international flights is also going up, and we continue to take an increasing share of the international business as well, which is adding to profitability, actually. And so we will continue to grow in terms of opening up kitchens in new areas like Amritsar, which was shut about 5 years ago. We reopened this year, actually, and it is already is profitable, actually. Third is productivity has gone up significantly, actually. If you take Delhi Kitchen as an example, between the pre-pandemic period and now, we have improved productivity by more than 50% actually. So I think productivity of kitchens is also going up. And finally, I would sort of say is that business model changes are coming, where our partner Stats is setting up a central kitchen in Bangalore, where I think the business model will change towards producing food in bulk and transporting to the other kitchens that we have. So what that means is that going forward in about 2-3 years' time, we will not need the big kitchens in Bombay and Delhi in terms of sizes. They will receive the food from the central kitchen and they will become the repackaging kitchens, which means that should also help in terms of driving costs down actually. So I think there are a number of factors at play which ensures that the trajectory of TajSATS is going to be very significantly high actually.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Giri. Thank you, Puneet.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sumant Kumar from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. So my question for US, UK business, and we have seen in FY23 occupancy is still lower. Okay. And the recovery is lower. So can you talk about going forward? Can we expect the occupancy, what we have seen in FY20, say for US 75%, and FY23 we have 59% only, and UK 79% in FY20, and we have 71% in FY23. So can we reach the FY20 level occupancy for these two geographies?
Sumant, we will reach here, and also Cape Town, we will do better. We can already say that April for London has been a very strong month, better than any April that we have seen before. So I think also because of the coronation of the, you know, the royalty, the what is happening, so there is a lot of activity in London, and slowly, you know, markets are usually efficient and they go down, but they at least come back to the level they were. But I do expect US to do much better, and also for London to do much better because of the investments we have made and are making in these properties, in their repositioning. And, you know, 59% occupancy for the largest lodging market in the world is a very low level. So these markets are used to operating at 75 plus. And that's why I also feel the best is yet to come, as these hotels with the income that they have in dollars and pounds multiplies manifold in Indian rupees when we report. Also, when they are not doing well, like they have not done as well in last year, they tend to understate what our normal result would have been. So in a way, it would be fair to say that that is a hidden potential for us, and especially also even Cape Town, albeit small, but we took over 100% ownership of Cape Town at the peak of COVID, and you know, the third wave, the Omicron, started in South Africa. So the first 6 months of last financial year were more or less like a washout for Cape Town. So all these hotels should do much better in this quarter and the next quarters to come.
Yeah. Just building on it, Sumant, I think if you look at US, while you highlighted the occupancy of 59%, I think remember that 22-23 was the year which was the first year after the COVID, and therefore we were more cautious also, and we drove a rate-driven strategy. So ARR did grow up by 25%. Because the more you open up the hotel, the cost would have gone up. So we wanted to drive the rate strategy. But now I think with the COVID behind us, I think what is happening now is that we will drive the occupancy as well. And bear in mind that the banquets did not fully kick in the previous year. The banquets will start kicking in fully this year. So a combination of driving occupancy, banquet improvement, all of these should help is what I would say actually.
Talking about Rajasthan, FY20 occupancy was 52% and FY23 is 51%. So do you think this is a normal occupancy for Rajasthan market?
I think. See, what we have not seen is really the benefit of the international passenger, as you know. I think Rajasthan with the palaces truly depend upon the international passengers.
Yes.
And I think that has not come in. And that going up should certainly help in terms of driving the occupancies in Rajasthan actually.
Okay. The last question, the Kolkata, we have seen a significant improvement in occupancy, but rate increase is minimal compared to other market. Any specific reason for that?
See, Suman, every market will not move at the same speed and pace, or you know, there are different issues in different markets. So if we look at places around Kolkata, like Chia Kutir, we opened in Karsiong, Darjeeling area. It did very well because that was a great place to go to, and it got very well established. Similarly, we'll be opening this year in Gangtok, the Taj in Guras Kutir. So there are different markets and different, and the beauty is how hedged is your portfolio. So I think Indian Hotels can not only by different brands, but by being present in 125 plus locations, in being all the metros, but also in the tier 1, tier 2 cities, but even more importantly, having a healthy mix of resorts, you know, the number of resorts we have really helped us in the last few years, and we want to maintain that strategy. Sometimes, you know, let's say Odisha, which hosted the World Cup hockey, was going up, and maybe if there is no World Cup hockey, it will for 6 or 8 weeks, then revenue start going down. So there are those one-off events, there are elections, there are, you know, so many things that keep happening in a marketplace. But all in all, most of the metros are great. The air show in Bengaluru, it does not happen every year. One year it takes it up, the next year it brings it down. But generally speaking, India remains a very strong market because the demand is stronger than the new supply that is coming in.
Okay. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Prateek Kumar from Jefferies India. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah. Thanks, sir. Congrats for great results. First question is on the supply addition. So based on pipeline data which you have given, our room count or supply for Indian Hotels is growing at 10% CAGR over the next 4 years. How should we understand this in context of mid-single-digit supply growth for industry? We hear that some of the larger industry peers also appear to be adding at good pace. So is it like top 10 players are adding at higher industry supply and smaller players are unable to add the pipeline?
Kiri, I could not understand because the call kept dropping. Can you? Did you understand? Would you like to take that?
Yeah, I think fundamentally the question is that we are adding supply 10% every year. In the context of industry supply growing at less than 10%, is what his question is, that are the bigger players taking a bigger share? And so he wanted some color in terms of our supply growth versus industry supply growth.
Yeah, we said that we have an industry leading pipeline. And there was a time when others used to say they are larger, those stones are gone. Because nobody is signing more hotels or opening. Even signing is not important. It's opening is that is the key. And when we said we are opening almost, we opened 16 hotels last year and will be opening anything north of 20 hotels this year. That gives a good flavor of what is about to come and what is about to change. And we see no reason about the openings slowing down because 73 hotels in various stages of development to open over the next 3 years is a very big number. And this does not include any possible conversions which we will get. That means existing hotels which get reflagged or rebranded. So I think we are in a very good space, and that is the dominance that was needed, and also a proof that why going multi-brand instead of, there was a talk 5-6 years ago if we should be only doing Taj, why that multi-brand strategy in a heterogeneous landscape is a big boost to us, and also a big boost to the hospitality landscape in India, because you know, we are the largest hospitality ecosystem, so we have to take that leadership position, the ownership, and drive these businesses forward.
And you see, Prateek, the growth, the momentum is only going up. Historically, we were opening around 2,000 rooms per year. But now in 23-24, we expect 2,300 plus rooms and nearly 3,000 rooms in 24-25. And so therefore, this momentum of opening room openings will definitely go up actually.
Thank you. And my second question is on ARR. So on a standalone basis or overall Indian operation basis, I mean, we ended the year on a very high base and multiple round of price hikes or ARR hikes which happened during the year, probably June and October and February. So, like, because of very strong exit, is it like, from modeling perspective, is it like, okay to assume like a high single digit kind of ARR growth for next year or maybe low double digit?
See, as long as we have a good base of demand which we have today, there is no reason why ARR should not keep growing. See, ARRs have not grown in the last 10 years. They have only grown in the last year. So if we took 2012 as a base, the ARR and take that 2011-2012 as a financial year as 100, then there was a continuous decline in the ARR because of the imbalance in supply and demand. This has become healthy in last year, and the expectation is based on a report of, I think, HVS Anaroc, that should reach at the level of 125 versus 11-12 as a base. So if the market reaches 125, we are very confident of doing 130 or 135 with 11-12 as a base because of the power of our brands, as some of your colleagues have written also about it. But also very important is our loyalty-driven revenue is increasing very much. The Tata Neu is beginning to settle down and establish and is growing. So Tata Neu, and we are the founding member of Tata Neu, is beginning to assist us. So getting base business through our normal channels, through airline crews, through contracted business, through Tata Neu business gives us the base so that we can indulge in better comprehensive revenue management to yield much better rates and occupancy. So we are very optimistic on that front.
Yeah, just one build on it, Prateek, is that if you look what's happening is that with the rise in rates which has happened, the rates are now settling down at a higher level actually, even in the month of April. So if you see the rates in Q1, we expect it to be better than what was happening last year in terms of Q1 because the rates have settled down actually. And as you go through the year, if you see what happened last year, the rates kept going up. And the good news is that as we go towards the second half of the year, we have the G20 in September, we have the World Cup cricket, the momentum in terms of weddings, and all of those should actually help. And the foreign travelers coming up and coming back, I think all of those should help actually. And we will continue to work on those factors. And the other point what we mentioned is that, you know, again I re-emphasize the point that our top line diversification is a big thing. And I think that will continue to play a very big role in terms of driving the profitability and the top line actually. And as I repeat again, the story of Indian hospitality is a story of penetration actually. And I think, you know, people tend to look at surrogates like airlines actually.
So please take a minute. Line for Giri sir has been disconnected. We'll just reconnect them.
Okay. No, I can take further questions.
Yeah, so my other question was on Tata Neu only mentioned. So where are we in terms of our customer base from Tata Neu and like and at enterprise level? And I think like a steep marketing activity around Tata Neu and during IPO this year, how do we see that over FY24?
You know, we are very pleased that this is coming as a big boost to our business. On our own, I doubt if we would have been able to develop a loyalty program with that kind of, capital that is needed and the kind of following it can get. With Croma, with Big Basket, with, Titan now coming on board, there's so many other brands that I expect Tata Neu to become a very strong player in the next you know, 12 to 18 months. And the stronger Tata Neu gets, the bigger will be the benefit, including to Indian Hotels. Especially, we have just now onboarded also Ginger with the technical upgrade that was needed to be linked to Tata Neu. This is only like 6 weeks ago. So I think these kind of businesses will benefit a lot. Human should benefit a lot from Tata Neu. AMA will benefit a lot. So a lot of this earning and burning in various areas will happen. Of course, the budget businesses will benefit more, and the luxury becomes more aspirational, so that will take some time. But we are very, very pleased. Our loyalty base has doubled in the last 13 months. 7th of April last year was when Tata Neu was launched. So it's not even 13 months. So it's a little less than 13 months. But yes, there were some startup issues, which is normal when you try to combine so many companies and businesses. But we are very, very pleased and very optimistic about the outlook, about the contribution that Tata Neu is going to make. And we work very closely with the Tata Digital team in making things happen, in making promotions happen, in making campaigns happen, marketing campaigns, and how to keep improving this platform, because it's a big win-win for all of us.
Sorry, I got cut off. I don't know what happened. I've just rejoined. Apologies.
Yes, Giri, I answered in between. There was a question on Tata Neu.
Yeah.
And we have had, I said, double our loyalty-based active members in just less than 13 months. And our loyalty-led revenue is almost 20% of the enterprise-level revenue, not the reported, but the system-wide or the enterprise-level revenue. And we remain very optimistic and very pleased with the way Tata Neu is evolving and assisting us in our business.
Thank you, sir. These are the questions, and all the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nihal Jham from Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Yes, good morning, Mr. Chhatwal and Mr. Giri, and congratulations on the strong performance. So my first question was that given there has been such a strong surge of domestic travel and international is still recovering, is there a case of seasonality in the industry starts getting a little more normalized, or you expect that as international travel comes back that the Q3 and Q4 quarters will still remain the biggest ones significantly versus, say, the first half of the year?
Giri?
No, would you just take it, Puneet, because I'm just a bit lost. I mean, in terms of the audio here, would you take that question, and I'll respond on that subsequently.
Yeah, Nihal, I think with World Cup cricket, with the peak of G20, which will happen in September, October, and very strong, robust demand on weddings, that is the only business that is getting booked in advance. Of so much, you know, with so much of lead time, there is no reason that makes us feel today that Q3 and Q4 should not be as strong as they have been in the previous financial year. And I actually feel it will be even stronger because of these one-off events that are happening. And we, as a sector, on the various platforms that I sit on, whether Hotel Association or CII, etc., which I chair, the general consensus is that based on the queries that most of the travel agents are getting, is that the foreign tourist arrival is expected to go back to 19-20 level as of October.
Got that. It was also in relation to, given that generally from Q4 to Q1 there is a certain percentage drop that we see, would it be the case that wouldn't play out in the coming years as domestic tourism is strong and travel is strong, and maybe that kind of a jump back doesn't happen because the FTAs in Q4 were not as much, so that demand going away is not going to be as much of an impact as what it has been historically?
Yeah, you're right, Nihal. You actually, I don't know if it's a statement or a question, but whatever it is, I agree with what you said.
Okay, sure. The second one is that on the new initiatives, you didn't mention they are asset light, but you mentioned that some part of the free cash flow will be used towards them. I am assuming it will just be minimal spends, or there is something more on a larger scale?
Minimal spends. We are not looking into some big investments. But of course, these businesses have been done through just incremental cost and incremental revenue model. So let's say if you want to build 10, 20 armors and each armor costs 5 crores, so it's not a big amount, it's a good investment. In 5 years, you know, or 7 years, the cost of each of those villas will double and we don't have to buy land. We are sitting on a lot of land banks. As an example, in Taj Exotica in Goa, we have the ability to build more. There are so many other places where we have, you know, FSI available and we can build, and that we would have to do on our own so that we don't dilute. But we can also enter into some kind of development agreements with developers, builders in a sale and leaseback model. Up till now, our model has been purely fee-based model, and we have not added any kind of these kind of operating lease or ownership model on any of this. So it's all driven by that, and that's why it drives 50% plus margins on these businesses. But if we want to scale it up, we'll have to, and we want to scale it up, we'll have to make some, you know, sliver, sliver investments into some of these businesses in key strategic locations, and also help on our asset management, because we have the assets, we have the land banks, we don't have to go and acquire the land.
Got that. Just a final question from my side was that we see now we are getting aggressive again on the international expansion side with the Dhaka expansion, and I'm guessing all that is on management contract side. So just as an initiative going forward, as you look at other Southeast Asian cities, and I'm guessing multiple other parts of the world, this will be mainly via MCs only, right?
Yes. Operating leases or management contracts, there is no, we are not going to enter into single asset acquisitions as we speak. Unless there is one big exception for some reason that we don't know of today. It's like a black swan event on the negative side. On the positive side, something comes up which makes so much sense to buy, then you will buy it, right? So, but those are one-offs. And a normal business plan strategy, which we'll communicate more in the capital market day, we have no plan to acquire assets.
Yeah, wonderful. So, best wishes, Ed, and see you on the capital market day. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nihal. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vikas Ahuja from Antique Stock Broking. Please go ahead.
Hi, Vikas. Hi, good morning. Congratulations on the strong domestic performance and execution. So, just one clarification. I mean, what the question Nihal asked. On seasonality. So from Q1 to Q4 to Q1, we normally see a drop. So what I could make out, you know, from your statement that the operating drivers, the RevPAR we have achieved in Q4, is it a possibility that we might achieve something similar in Q1 as well? However, you know, when we talk about the second half, there are enough levers like World Cup is there to boost it, to take it to another higher level. Is my understanding correct, or I misinterpreted.
I think if I take this question, Vikas, I think what's happening is that the Q1 momentum as compared to Q1 of last year is very strong, actually, based on whatever we have seen in the month of April and May. So that continues to be very strong. So we will show some good growth in relation to that. So therefore, I think Q1 is going to be pretty strong. So that's number one. Q2 visibility at this point of time is weak, but as we go into the second half of the year, weddings visibility is beginning to pick up. The G20 and the World Cup, as I said, will pick up. The foreign travelers coming in will happen, actually. So therefore, I think if I look at this year, I think we should have a good year, is what I would say.
Okay, so that statement was in terms of why and why. Okay, and secondly, you know, when we talk about the US business, I know you have answered that in detail, but the drop we have seen this quarter, especially on sequential, is it largely on seasonality or some part of macro also played out?
I think typically the Q4 is actually a weakest quarter.
Yeah.
And for the U.S. in particular, actually, Q4 is usually the weakest quarter. And winter, no? It's the winter, and therefore, I think banquets-
Yes.
Don't happen and the occupancies don't happen. And therefore, to that extent, I think seasonality played a very big role, actually. But I think, but other than that, I think this year, if you look at it in terms of what I answered earlier, in terms of improving occupancies, driving the banquet businesses, should all help us to grow the U.S. business. If we look at the cash loss position in U.S., if you look at the exceptional statement under standalone, you will notice that the pre-pandemic losses were about 69 crores, and that came down to about 22 crores. And I think what we are looking at this year is to make sure that we will be cash breakeven on an operating basis. Bear in mind, in 2022, 2023, the U.S. was EBITDA positive, actually. So hence, I think, the U.S. should do much better this year than the previous year, actually. And Chambers, as Puneet also said, Chambers is coming up. So there are a number of things that we are doing, which will ensure that the U.S. does much better this year than last year.
Sure. Just to clarify, you said that the drop sequentially was all because of seasonality, and there was nothing, you know, macro-led or cancellations because of that.
Yeah, that is-
Am I correct?
I think, yeah, Q4 historically is a seasonality factor because of the weather.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
That I understand.
Yeah.
And finally, one bookkeeping. In terms of, you know, the corporate overhead, we have seen a 300 basis point reduction since pre-COVID. Do we think there's more room there, or largely we are done, especially on that? Thanks. Thanks a lot in this matter. Best of luck.
I think, yeah, I think the way to look at corporate overheads is that now the corporate is now managing a network which is significantly higher than what it was in the pre-COVID period, actually. So therefore, while some absolute costs may go up, and rightly so, because of, because, you know, of investment in, say, IT or investment in marketing, from a productivity perspective, that 5.8% that we talked about is the kind of numbers that we're looking at. So productivity will remain at around 5.8% of top line. Some absolute costs may go up because of the growth in network, which is happening, actually.
Sure, sir. Thanks a lot, and best of luck for the next quarter.
Thank you, Vikas. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Karan Khanna from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity, and congrats on another good quarter. So my first question, you know, just talking about your international expansion. So most of your recent management contracts have been centered around the Asian cities. But, Puneet, given your background, are there any plans to enter the European market also? And second, as a follow-up, how are the contracts in the international management contract structured versus the domestic market? Because here you're competing with some of the larger global hotel chains.
Yeah. No, Giri here. I will take this question. So our international contracts are oriented towards two things. Number one, the areas where there is an Indian diaspora. That's why Middle East has been very strong, actually. Dhaka also plays to that because it's part of the subcontinent. And in the future, we do look at opportunities in, say, Southeast Asia. U.K., for instance, I think we can take more hotels beyond London, for instance, in Edinburgh or in Birmingham or Glasgow. I think possibilities are there. As far as Europe is concerned, there are interesting possibilities which come because of the Air India Vistara flights which go there, actually. You know, for instance, the TCS has got significant operations, Tata Steel has got significant operations. So there are certain cities, for instance, where a combination of Tata Group presence as well as the flights of Air India and Vistara are going to create opportunities for, say, 150-room hotel, where the base occupancies can come from this business itself, actually. So that we continue to explore, Karan.
Sure. Sure. And the second question, you know, in the last Capital Markets Day, Giri, you spoke about looking to make the corporate holding structure simpler. So if there's any development over the last one year, on the same that you'd like to share?
No, nothing. No developments, and I think this is an area which we continue to work on. As you know, we have complex partnership structures in different entities, and we continue to engage in terms of with the partners in terms of possibilities. And I think we will advise as soon as we kind of have an alignment with any of these partners. I mean, it's really what Oriental Hotels and Benares Hotels and PM. I think these are the three main entities where we need to work on. And I think we will come back, guys. We'll come back, Karan, as and when we kind of have an understanding with any of these people. I think for the last 6 years that I've been there, I think we've all been talking, actually. So we'll see. We'll see.
Sure. And lastly, just continuing from one of the previous participants, so just talking about the Delhi micro market, you know, Aero City, there are a bunch of new hotels that are opening up over the next 2 to 3 years. So are there any active discussions that you're having in terms of, you know, signing management contract in that market?
No, not yet. But you know what, I think that's an area where we'll continue to look, actually. And if there's a development, we'll advise. At this point of time, I would simply say that we are focused on where we are. And as Puneet said, that those are cities, Delhi, Bombay are cities where we will continue to have significant opportunities and we'll continue to expand, actually. We can't have enough in these markets, actually.
Great. That's it from my side. Thank you and best.
Thank you, Karan.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Pallavi Deshpande from Sameeksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I just wanted to know, since you mentioned at the beginning, you know, this demand exceeding the supply. So how long does this cycle run? Do we have 3 to 5 years more in this cycle to run here, given that, you know, we recognize it's a cyclical business?
Yeah. No, I think, sorry.
Second, and the second question would be any guidance on ROIC?
Okay. Let me answer the both the questions. So the first one is that if I look at the India macro with the 6% plus kind of economic growth and also the growth kind of going beyond the key cities into the interiors, I think basically means that the country is in good shape. That's number one. Number two, within that, the consumption is quite a consumption theme I'm really excited about. You may have short-term blips on consumption, you know, what people have spoken about, K-shaped recoveries and all of those actually. But nevertheless, if you look at the demographics and the long-term consumption trends, they are very, very intact actually. The younger people are spending. The baby boomer equivalent in India are also spending because they have become empty nesters actually. And longer term, if you see one of the things that they speak about in the U.S., is that in the next few years, once the baby boomers pass, there'll be one big wealth transfer to the younger generation, and you will see that in India as well. Therefore, I personally believe that the long-term trends are going to be extremely strong on consumption, actually. Hence, I think, and therefore, I think I come back again, I repeat, is that the story of hospitality comes back to the penetration, actually. And hence, very confident in terms of that. As far as ROIC is concerned, as you have seen, our growth is largely coming through, what do you say, the asset-light growth. And in terms of capital allocation strategy, we have spoken about it in some of our meetings. Basically, there are three or four elements to our capital allocation strategy. Number one is that we do want to maintain a certain strategic cash reserve for any eventualities like another COVID or GST or demonetization, actually. And that, I think, at this point of time, we are saying will be about 750 crores. That's the first part. The second part on renovations is that we largely intend to make sure that renovations are in line with our depreciation, actually. That is the second part of renovation. And that also helps us in driving profitabilities because these renovations in existing properties help to drive asset management, actually. The third is the greenfield opportunities where we will either construct, as Puneet was saying, in terms of where we have land banks or the new projects that we have signed in Lakshadweep and Kevadia and others, actually. So there will be some capital which will go towards greenfield, actually. But in greenfield projects, we are open to take project debt. Especially in the new era of ESG, we will probably take some sustainable debt. So that is something that we are open with, actually. That's the third part, actually. And fourth is really the dividend thing. While we have not yet announced a dividend policy linked to PAT, but you have seen that the dividend has jumped to 1 rupee a share. And the payout this year is approximately, I think, 17%, if I'm not mistaken, actually, in terms of the standalone PAT and about 15% of the consolidated PAT. So I think the capital allocation policy will continue to be that. And hence, the reason I'm mentioning this capital allocation policy is that this ensures that we use our cash well and therefore driving up ROC. And of course, the other question that Karan asked in terms of simplification, as and when those happen, those also will help to drive efficiencies on the balance sheet. So that's the way I would kind of answer. So I think ROICs are definitely improving. And with sensible capital allocations, this will continue to do well actually.
Right, so I understand on the consumption side. So on the supply side, you know, we have seen a spate of not in the 5-star, but more in the 4 and 3, even maybe where Ginger is. The spate of signing agreements by your competitors in terms of, you know, they also going the asset-light manner, and the industry seems to be heading towards that. So just on the supply side, do we have any concerns? Is the competitive intensity increasing?
No. I think, see, India is a very big market. With India being a very big market, I think it is not a winner-take-all market. I think what is good is that we are leaders, as Puneet pointed out. We have been leading in terms of signings and openings, actually. And I think in the 3-star category, Ginger kind of category that we spoke about, the opportunities are even greater, actually, in terms of supply. Because, you know, you don't need an outstanding location for a Ginger or that category of hotels like you need in Taj, actually. You fundamentally need a sensible business location. And the possibility of conversions are very much there. See, what has happened, especially because of COVID, I think if you are an unbranded standalone hotel, your ability to access marketing is very difficult, actually. So therefore, many of the smaller hotels are actually aligning themselves with one of the branded chains, actually. So the opportunities for conversion are much greater there. And hence, I think we don't anticipate a challenge. Of course, while the supply shortfall is there, I think, of course, supply shortfall will never be a perennial factor. And I think as the industry is doing well, that gives the motivation in terms of people to start putting capexes and start kind of investing. And that will also happen. Right now, of course, the new capital investment in hotels is kind of still low, because bank balance sheets, you know, banks are also sitting on debt with companies, and some of the, emergency credit lines, ECGLS, will start up running out this year. But I think eventually supply will come, institutional capital behind supplies will happen, and at the lower end, you will see a lot more conversions, and we will continue to lead, is what I think. India is a big country.
Right. Thank you so much, sir.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Anushi Vakharia from BP Wealth Management. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for the opportunity. I just wanted to understand the management contract model a bit better. Like in your previous conference call, you had mentioned about how owner stays and sales, we have a 15% management fee, a 15% fee plus a 3% marketing cost. So can I just understand the overall portfolio level, like how does this work, and yeah, just a clarity in that.
Yeah, sure. As we have always said, if you look at the typical management contracts, I think there are really three components, which is really the base fee, the incentive fee, and the reimbursements actually. Between the three components, I would say it's about 6-7% actually in terms of the total. And that is the pattern which continues actually. That's the pattern which continues. AMA is a different business where I think where these are really marketing arrangements and these are small properties actually. So we do charge 15% on management fees and another 3% in terms of marketing pass. So that continues. So there is no change in any of this at all actually. No change at all.
So the 6-7% fees that you have mentioned for all your properties like Taj and Ginger, whichever you open it through the management contract model, and like what is this fee based on exactly? So I just want to understand the model of it better.
In Ginger, we do very, very few management contracts. We mostly do operating leases, you know, fully fitted leases. Because, you know, Ginger in a 100-room property has a top line of say between 7 and 10 crores as an example. Now, if you when you do a management contract in Ginger, what happens is that the fee is 40-50 lakhs, and 40-50 lakhs is a small fee amount in a context of a small top line. So what we prefer to do is to take the whole P&L actually, which means in terms of, so when we take a whole P&L of say 10 crores on and even if you pay 20% in terms of say 20%, 25% in terms of say the lease charges to the owners, the balance, you still end up making significant money. So it is not 50 lakhs that we will make, we'll probably make around 3 crores or so. And that is really the model that we're adopting in Ginger. That's what it is. And other places, Taj and Vivanta, we will take management contracts actually. But in Ginger, we don't take. I mean, except unless it's a bigger property, like the one which is coming up in Bangalore Airport. Ginger is about, I think, 150 rooms plus, if I'm not mistaken. There, I think we are doing, I think it's 200 rooms hotel, if I'm not mistaken. I think there we are doing a management contract. But other than that, we don't do management contract in Ginger, actually.
Oh, okay. Thank you. That was it.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Raji from DM Capital Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes, you are actually. Yes, you are.
So on slide 37, you used to provide this fixed cost as a percentage of revenue. Can you help me with that number? What is that for the full year?
Fixed cost as a percentage of revenue, I don't think I have it immediately, but maybe we can take it offline and sort of talk about it. I think today, I think we are more, which like 37 you're talking about, huh? 37, just a minute, yeah. So maybe, no, 37 is the margin. 37 is the margin slide. So what, why don't we, which one's here? Okay. Oh, if you look at this slide, see the raw material cost is totally variable. The payroll cost is a fixed cost, huh? Is really a fixed cost. And that absolute sums have gone up, but the productivity is being maintained. Another operating cost have an element of both variable and fixed, actually, because, you know, it's see, fundamentally what's happening is that with the level of operations significantly going up, obviously absolute costs are going up. But within that, what we are trying to make sure is that our productivity is maintained. And as you see from the chart to the end, the staff-to-room ratios are also being kind of protected without compromising on service quality, actually. So that's the way to look at it, actually. But if you need more color on fixed costs, maybe you can speak to Neha and Rupesh and the team subsequently, and they will be able to clarify, actually.
Sure. And Mr. Chakwal actually mentioned about 100 crores in a stable state revenue of Ginger Santa Cruz.
Yes.
And what is the F&B to, let's say, room revenue ratio for that hotel? What you're targeting as compared to, let's say, a regular Ginger?
See, Ginger will continue to be an accommodation-only game. But because it's a 371-room hotel, it will have one small banquet hall, actually. So, which means that I don't expect the 100 crore top line F&B to be more than around 20% or so, 20-25%, as opposed to that typical 45% that we have. It will largely be accommodation driven. And since it's going to be accommodation driven, the room profitabilities are very high, actually. I think just one comment to the group. I think I will take one more question because I have to jump on a flight. I have to go to the airport, and we can continue the conversation. I think Rupesh, Neha are all available, so we can kind of reach out to us and we will kind of take questions separately. So if I can just take one more question, please.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nikhil Agarwal from VT Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, sir, and thank you for the opportunity. Sir, just had one question. Your operating expenses have increased quarter on quarter. So just wanted to understand, like, why was that, and like, was there some one-off, or do you see this to continue in the change going forward as well?
So if you see the Q4 standalone number, where the other expenses have gone up by 20 crores. Also look at the top line in standalone, which has gone up by 70 crores actually. And therefore, it is linked largely to the growth in revenue. And I think in Q3, there was some reversal of 5 crores on one line. So there is a little bit of a one-off actually. But other than that, I think the increase is proportionate, is gone up because of operations and that one-off of 5 crores. That's all. It was reversed in the previous quarter.
Okay, got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I think if it's okay with you all, I would like to thank you all and conclude this conversation. As Puneet mentioned, and as we have outlined on this call, I think we are coming off an excellent year in terms of all-round performance. And as we look ahead, we believe that the macroeconomic conditions, the hospitality conditions in terms of demand supply, the strong consumption growth, I think all augurs well. We will continue to adopt a differentiated strategy especially when it comes to diversification of top line and productivity and cost, to ensure that we will be better than the market. Our balance sheet strategy is also robust in terms of capital allocation. So we look forward to this, the future with confidence. And I think 10,000 crores of enterprise revenue, 1,000 crores of PAT, 1,000 crores of free cash flow was what we kind of demonstrated in the year that just passed. I would just conclude by saying, expect more. So look forward to continuing the conversation. Thank you all for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much, sir. On behalf of Indian Hotels Company Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.
Thank you.